Welcome to Central Coast Voices, a program addressing the ramifications of change in our communities and beyond, and how today's choices will impact tomorrow's community. This program is a project of KCBX and our program hosts. And today, this week, our host is Dr. Mario Espinoza-Kulik. And because our program is live this week, we do invite you to be part of today's discussion with your calls at 805-781-3875, or you can email your questions to us at voices@kcbx.org. So now let's join Dr. Kulik and our guest. Over to you, Mario.
Thanks, Brad. Good afternoon and welcome, everyone. My name is Dr. Mario Espinoza-Kulik, and you are listening to Central Coast Voices on KCBX. Today, we are discussing the profound effects of immigration policies on our local communities. Immigration continues to be a pressing issue, particularly as federal, state, and local policies evolve and intersect. This topic's urgent, given the ongoing challenges faced by migrant families, such as housing, employment, healthcare, and navigating systemic barriers to accessing resources. Joining us today is Assemblymember Don Addis, a dedicated advocate for equity and chair of the Budget Subcommittee on Health in the California Legislature. Assemblymember Addis has been a champion for Central Coast residents, focusing on representation, immigrant rights, and access to essential services. Welcome to the show, Don.
Thank you so much for having me. It's good to be with you, Doctor.
And we're so happy that you're here. I'd like to start by asking you some questions for our guests to get to know you a little bit better. And the first one that I had for you was if you could share, please, a bit about your journey into public service and what motivated you to campaign for state assembly.
No, that's such a good question. You know, I spent over 20 years in public education as a teacher and served students with disabilities and their families. I worked with migrant children, undocumented, mixed status families, and did all of that during the last president who's coming back under the Trump administration. And one of the things that I encountered is that I had worked my entire career, half of my life serving people and primarily serving children and families who are in need. And then we faced an administration that had a full frontal attack on the very people that I was serving and had spent my life's work serving and supporting. And those were people with disabilities as well as undocumented and mixed status children and families. And it really motivated me and sort of lit a different fire to get active in a different way, which I did at the time. Most people know me from Women's March, from founding the Women's March in San Luis Obispo. And we had, you know, thousands of people come out into the streets. And not as many people know about my education background. But, you know, once I decided to get active, we founded Women's March and led over 60 different demonstrations over the 4 years of the Trump administration, many of those related to immigrant rights and supporting the immigrant community here in San Luis Obispo County. And that led me into public office and into running for office.
That's amazing. I love that you're an educator and also an organizer. And I'm just wondering if that's influenced like how your legislative priorities are.
Very much so. I would say that as much as it's influenced my legislative priorities, it's also influenced how I do business. I would say as a special education teacher and working with English learner students and migrant families, first and foremost, my job was about listening, looking at what people really truly needed, and then helping them navigate very challenging systems. Public education is here to serve, but it can also be very challenging for families, and you're working within a government organization. And so being able to be a fierce advocate for people, for children in particular, has influenced the way that I do business in the legislature, but also my priorities. And it's one of the reasons that I am incredibly honored to have been named the health budget sub-chair that you mentioned, was working with children who didn't have the access that they needed to healthcare, didn't have access that they needed to services, and knowing how far we've come, but also how far we still have to go in California.
That's amazing work. And I say that as somebody who was a benefit I benefited from public services like Medi-Cal. However, my mom growing up was undocumented. Mm-hmm. And so while I may have been eligible for Medi-Cal when I was in elementary school, we never signed up because of identifying information was just a stigma about signing up for things like that. So, but to see how things have evolved since then, mm-hmm. and your involvement in reassuring your constituents is just really heartwarming to hear.
No, well, number one, I'm sorry that you went through that. It's a very scary thing to go through when you're a child and growing up, and it's a scary thing for mixed status families to go through. California has made huge gains in terms of covering all income eligible people with Medi-Cal, so over a million people, regardless of their documentation status. Undocumented people are now covered by Medi-Cal. But it's one of the things that I'm very aware of as the Health Budget Subcommittee Chair is coming into this new Trump administration. The rhetoric around a tax on health care, as well as a tax on the immigrant community, and making sure that as the budget chair, that we're doing everything that we can to maintain the access and the insurance and the protections that we have, and to continue to expand care. Because as we know, in San Luis Obispo County, even if you do have insurance, it is exceedingly hard to find services and to find health care.
Oh, definitely. I wanted to ask you if you could highlight a learning experience that you've had that significantly shaped your approach to representing the folks in your district, or when it comes to being in conversations about policymaking.
You know, that is a really good question. A large part of our legislation has come directly from constituents or directly from the district. We just did an important piece of legislation around the regional centers, and these are centers across California that serve people with developmental disabilities. There's almost 500,000 people in California with developmental disabilities, and people were coming to us because of delays in service or feeling or having experiences where there was inequity in those services. And so we just passed legislation to open up those services to public records requests. So there's more transparency in the way services are provided to people with disabilities. And that's something that came directly from constituent experiences. Another piece of legislation that we just did that I was very proud of in my first year in the legislature was lifting the statute of limitation on child sex assault in civil cases. And that came directly from a constituent who told us that they had had experiences as a child and they were not able to seek justice because of these arbitrary timelines on justice. And so we were able to pass that bill and have it signed by the governor. And then a more recent one that was quite the nail biter the whole way through, didn't pass until 13 minutes before the deadline, was our local community choice bill around oil and gas production within counties and local jurisdictions. And we were very proud to get that signed by the governor, but that came out of a local case where voters in Monterey County had passed an ordinance against fracking, and it was overturned by the Supreme Court. And then because of our legislation, we put the power back in the hands of the people. So a big lesson of mine goes back to that idea of listening to what people actually need. And then I'll just add one last piece is we've really been working on utility rate reform and trying to bring cost of living down for Central Coast Californians.
That's amazing. And the fact that people on the ground are sharing their experiences with you and impacting the way that change is made in California is really inspiring. What opportunities are there for people to voice those concerns to you? How do you get word?
Yeah, no, that's a great question. So if you go on our website, and I think you're going to share our website in a little bit, but if you go on a website, there's a form that you can fill out, and we read those emails regularly. And so it doesn't go into the abyss. It comes straight to our staff, and our staff will contact you back. There's also a form where you can propose legislation. But But we get calls all the time from people who need help, largely with state agencies. And I should just say that over the 2 years that I have been an assembly member, we have returned close to $1 million directly to people's pockets, primarily through state agencies that constituents have had trouble navigating. Oftentimes it's unemployment insurance. And regularly we hear from people who say, you know, I haven't been able to navigate this system. I am about to be evicted, or my car, you know, might be impounded because I can't pay the fees. And our office helps them get those dollars back. And that has been a huge and gratifying piece of this job, is when we're able to directly affect real people, people that you see at the grocery store, that we see as we're walking down the street, and know that our office has been able to make their lives just a little bit better that day.
That's awesome. And just sort of like a curiosity question related to calling your representatives. When we see calls of action, having people call their representatives because they want to make change and things like that, what is that like when I always imagine people's phones ringing off the hooks when it's like very pressing, like a matter of activism? So I just wanted to know, like, what is that like as a representative?
Yeah, you know, I mean, we live in a free society, and so that's an incredibly important part of our democracy, is for people to be able to express their opinion and to get in touch with their representative. And it's one of the things that I value. So anything that goes into the computer gets logged, and I get to see, you know, how many people have called on which things. All the phone calls get logged, so that information comes to me. I will say that it is more poignant when it is somebody's personal experience, when they're speaking firsthand about something that has affected their life, and when they come from the place that they're talking about. So when we get calls from LA or San Francisco or out of the district, we know that, you know, there's some kind of campaign out there. People may or may not know a lot about the issue, and they're sort of calling everybody. When we get calls from our local constituents, we know that people are paying attention, the issue's important to them, there's a problem out there that we may have power to fix, and that we should look into fixing that. And then, of course, you know, we always want to know, as the legislative session gets going, folks have a lot of opinions about legislation and bills, and it's helpful if they do their homework first and then share their opinions with us, so that we know we're getting sort of an informed set of opinions about things. But I take all of that into account when I'm either crafting legislation or voting on legislation, or, you know, in the future, making budget decisions as the health chair.
That's great advice. And what or who inspires your advocacy or activism for migrant families on the Central Coast?
You know, the experience that I had that was the most poignant, and this was public in the Tribune, so I can speak about it, is a mother that I worked with in Grover Beach. And so she was undocumented, as was her husband. She had 3 documented children who were in local public schools, and they were homeowners on the Central Coast. And this is when I was leading Women's March and doing more public advocacy, and somebody came to me and asked if there was anything I could do to help this mother, or at least publicize the situation so that we could build support and potentially help her avoid deportation. The father had been deported, and one of the children was a minor and so still in school. And so, you know, being up close to what that family was experiencing through that process, knowing that they were homeowners and taxpayers right here in our community, knowing that their children had attended and continued to attend local schools, and then watching this family be ripped apart was incredibly, it was incredibly difficult. And it also gave me the resolve, made me know that as a community, we have to be resolute in our values of maintaining the fabric of our community. And I had known that that was coming, because I had gone to, I had been named Woman of the Year by our congressman locally, and then I had attended President Trump's first State of the Union. And at that first State of the Union, you know, there was so much rhetoric demonizing immigrant communities. We all knew this, that these attacks were coming. But to live it in real time was a whole different thing. And it really made me see how important it is that none of us stays silent, particularly going into this future where we know it's going to be very, very difficult for communities across the Central Coast.
Thank you, Assemblymember Mattis. I'm Dr. Mario Espinoza-Kulik with you for Central Coast Voices on KCBX, your Central Coast listener-supported radio station. As we continue Central Coast Voices, our guest today is Assemblymember Don Addis, who is joining us to discuss resources for migrant community members. We've been getting to know the Assemblymember and hearing about her work. Thanks for making the time to share with us on the air.
My pleasure.
Over the past several years, immigration has been at the forefront of political and community discussions. Policies like the California Values Act or Senate Bill 54, signed by Governor Newsom in 2017, protects immigrants by limiting state and local participation in federal immigration enforcement. This legislation promises that state and local resources are not to be used to assist federal immigration enforcement and affirms that public institutions like schools, hospitals, and courthouses remain safe spaces for everyone, regardless of immigration status. Federal policies under shifting presidential administrations have created uncertainty. For example, recent updates to temporary protected status, or TPS, and the ongoing debates over deferred action for childhood arrivals, or DACA program, have left many immigrants and their families unsure of their futures. Migrant communities also face challenges like misinformation campaigns and targeted anti-immigrant actions, such as a xenophobic and racist letter called The Brown Roundup Part 1, which was reportedly circulating in Lincoln County, Oregon just last week. This propagandic tool is encouraging readers to collect identifying data of brown residents and report it to the Department of Homeland Security after the national inauguration of President-elect Donald Trump. My question to you is, how are California's recent legislative efforts addressing these challenges faced by migrant families?
Well, I think first and foremost, I'd like to back up and just talk about why this is an important issue at all. And for us on the Central Coast, and I would say all across California and the United States, migrant people are part of the fabric of the community. And at its crux, we have a responsibility to maintain the health and welfare of our community as a whole and our community members as individuals. And so it's important that when we are approaching these issues, we understand that migrant people are part of our economy, creating, you know, billions of dollars a year, particularly on the Central Coast when we talk about agriculture and the visitor serving community, but in all different industries. I don't want to by any means pretend that migrant people aren't part of every industry we have here on the Central Coast and services across the Central Coast that help all of us. And so when we talk about these issues, sometimes we have we jump to what the problem is. We forget that we're really talking about creating a community that is whole and supporting a community that is whole and respecting every community member. And so that's why we make the laws that we make in California. One of the most important things and the most immediate things that we're doing right now is making sure that we have the funding, the resources, the personnel to defend the laws that California has put in place, like SB 54 that you mentioned. California has been a leader in making sure that entire communities have protections and that state resources are used to protect the people who live in California and who are contributing very much to our communities, our society, and our economy. So we gaveled into special session on December 5th, 2nd. I'm going to say it wrong. Our first day back, which was December 2nd, we gaveled into a special session. And what that means is that we have a special piece of legislation in front of us where we're considering $25 million allocation to the Department of Justice so that the California Department of Justice under Attorney General Rob Bonta is prepared to take proactive legal action where necessary. And I would say it's certainly my desire that where we can work with the federal administration, we do. California is the fifth largest economy in the world. We are a leader. We're certainly a leader globally and a leader for the United States. And so where we can, we do want to work with our federal administration. But where we can't, we have to stand up for ourselves. And so when we go back next week and for the coming weeks after, we will have this special session where we'll be considering the $25 million allocation. And then the Department of Justice will have beginning resources to take proactive action should they need to. And part of that will be the defense of SB 54.
Has this been done before? Is there evidence of how California can protect its policies and its residents through proactive justice?
Yeah. So under the prior Trump administration, California was a leader in bringing litigation against the federal government. And because of that, was able to bring hundreds of millions of dollars back to the taxpayers of California because of laws that we had passed that we were able to defend, as well as funding that we had allocated that we were able to defend. So there absolutely is a track record of success.
And one thing that is coming to mind through federal influence is the rhetoric around tariffs for imported goods. And I'm wondering, who does that hurt the most in terms of having a tax on products?
Well, I think it's, you know, nobody yet knows exactly what this incoming administration is going to do. So we're going to have to see if they impose the tariffs that they're talking, or if there's a lot of bluster going on, first and foremost, and then where those, you know, what kind of products they put tariffs on. And if those are products that, you know, everyday Americans are buying every day, what does that look like, and what kind of international negotiations that happen around those tariffs?
And I'm thinking about supportive policies, like when collaborations look good. What does that look like when federal, local, state partnerships are implementing supportive policies, like when they're working together in a way that benefits the people?
Well, I think that, you know, certainly the constituents that we hear from across the Central Coast want to be able to have a Central Coast that's affordable. They want representatives that are listening to them, and they want representatives who pick up the phone. And so that's one of the reasons I mentioned the close to $1 million that we've put back in constituents' pockets by helping them navigate very, very challenging department issues. That's why I mentioned, you know, working on affordability and creating communities and supporting communities where community members feel welcomed and respected. And so when you see different layers of government working well together, you start to see a community that feels those things, you know, in their everyday lives. One example is during the January 2022 storms. There was massive destruction across the Central Coast. President Biden came to the northern part of our assembly district, and I got to be part of his welcome party. And then Governor Newsom came as well. And Cal OES had boots on the ground. All of the departments and agencies were firing and acting together and making sure that the destruction that had happened here, one, was addressed in the moment that the FEMA dollars started to flow, but also that preventative action was taken so that we wouldn't see the same kind of destruction the next time there was a big storm. And, you know, we just had huge, you know, huge storms come across the Central Coast, and there was damage. And tragically, there was some loss of human life, but we didn't have the kind of destruction that we had had a couple years ago. And part of that is because agencies came together, the dollars started moving, and then we started to be proactive and preventative. And so that is something, you know, one of the things that it looks like when government is working for the people.
And I wanted to bring it back to the vulnerabilities that communities face of the uncertainty of, for example, being afraid of things that, I mean, I just think the reverberations of the previous administration coming back is raising a lot of fear around, like, not just the presidential administration, but like their neighbors and potentially friends and family. And so I just wanted to know, are there any protections in place to safeguard vulnerable communities from having their identities linked to immigration enforcement, like the Brown Roundup reports?
You know, we have been working diligently on data protection. And one of the things that I worked on last year, and I was very proud that the governor signed this bill, was a student data privacy piece of legislation, because what we learned was that students who were taking the AP tests in high school, any high school parents out there, this will resonate with, but AP tests or SAT tests, some of those companies were selling that data to social media companies. And so we worked to lock down that data to make sure that companies were not selling this kind of personally identifying information into the wrong hands. And so we also have a privacy committee in the state legislature, as well as select committees. And California has done a good job, and there's still work to do, particularly in protecting reproductive rights data, reproductive or people who can get pregnant, or people who, one example is people who use apps to track their cycles. They're thinking of getting pregnant, or they don't want to get pregnant, and so they're using these apps, they're tracking their cycles, and we don't want that data to then be used to persecute people who may be seeking abortions. And so we have done some really strong work to protect that kind of data. And so there is a footprint around data protection. But I know that right now, myself and many of my colleagues are looking for, you know, where are there any loopholes where data might not be protected, so that we can do the work that is needed to make sure that we're not unknowingly sharing information.
And do you have any hopeful words to share with constituents that might be bracing themselves for another 4 years of uncertainty and fear of, like, family separation and things like that? Like, what should people know?
Well, people should know, first and foremost, that we're here to help them, that all of the representatives that I've worked with, from local to congressional, understand the value of migrant families in California in particular. And we are here to be resolute. We're here to fight for the protections that do exist in California. And we're here to uphold our laws. And that's why we, in the legislature, that's why we're going into special session to look at allocating this $25 million to the Department of Justice. What I would also say is that, you know, children, regardless of their documentation status, have a right to go to school. This is something I worked closely with when I was a teacher. And this is settled Supreme Court decision that children are protected under the Fourth Amendment. They have a right to go to get a public education, a free, appropriate public education. So that also means a right to services within special education, and a right under Title III for English learner services. And nobody should be afraid of that. Recently, the Attorney General put out guidance for schools and other sensitive areas in terms of what their responsibilities and their rights are. And then San Luis Obispo County, since the last federal administration, there's been a number of local organizations that have coalesced, and emergency funding that has coalesced, that I'm sure, Doctor, you will cover, and others will share the information and the specifics. But it's been really important since the last administration that these resources are out there. And then there's also family support resources out there in terms of how to plan for a potential family separation, which I think is one of the important topics as well. What your rights are now, but what you need to do in the case of.
We're going to take a short break to hear from our team, and we will be right back on Central Coast Voices. We invite and welcome our listeners to bring your questions or comments about today's topic to our guests. To do that, call 805-781-3875, or you can email your questions to voices@kcbx.org.
I'm Maria Hinojosa. Next time on Latino USA, how the death of a young woman on a university campus fueled a movement to combat the crime of femicide in Mexico.
If they kill me, it'll be because I walk alone at night. If they kill me, they'll say it was because I was flirtatious and I said no.
That's next time on Latino USA.
On the next Fresh Air, we conclude our holiday week series collecting some of the 2024 interviews we particularly enjoyed with Selena Gomez, one of the stars of the series Only Murders in the Building and a star of the film Emilia Perez, and Alex Van Halen, who's written a memoir about his late younger brother, Eddie, and their band, Van Halen. Join us.
Naming a business or a brand can be a high-stakes proposition, and more goes into it than you might think.
You're trying to shift together all these syllables into something that's pronounceable, ownable, and able to be cleared legally.
I'm Kristen Schwab, the business of names, next time on Marketplace.
The city of New Orleans is in shock after a suspect intentionally drove a truck into a crowd celebrating New Year's on Bourbon Street. As the FBI continues to investigate the attack, NPR will continue to bring you the most up-to-date information. I'm Mary Louise Kelly. More on that story on All Things Considered from NPR News.
That's a look ahead to our Thursday here on KCBX. Latino USA comes up at 2 o'clock. That's followed by Fresh Air at 3, Marketplace at 4, and then All Things Considered wraps up the day's news from 4:30 to 6:30. Right now, let's return to Maria Espinoza-Kulik and his guests on Central Coast Voices. Back to you, Mario.
Thanks, Brad. Welcome back to Central Coast Voices, folks. I'm your host, Dr. Mario Espinoza-Kulik. Our guest today is Assemblymember Don Addis, who's joining us to discuss resources for immigrant community members and where protections are in place to keep our communities safe. Many listeners may not know where to start when seeking help. For migrant community members, navigating public support systems can feel daunting, especially when barriers like language access or fear of legal repercussions or doxing are involved. Organizations like Immigrant Legal Resource Center, California Immigrant Policy Center, and local advocacy groups such as Importa, the Central Coast Alliance United for a Sustainable Economy, commonly known as CAUSE, the United Farm Workers and Mixteco Indigena Community Organizing Project, or MICOP, offer legal assistance, language services, and community support. Additionally, state initiatives like the California Immigrant Justice Fellowship provide legal fellows to help individuals navigate immigration proceedings. For health-related needs, programs like Medi-Cal now extend coverage to all undocumented individuals. In education, institutions like Allen Hancock College's Aim to Dream Center and Cuesta College's Monarch Center are ensuring undocumented students have access to academic resources, financial aid, and counseling. And for K-12 students, the California's Migrant Education Program provides services to half of all school districts in California, including for San Luis Obispo, Santa Barbara, and Monterey counties. This initiative provides students and their families with academic help, after-school programs, health services, and family support. Assemblymember Addis, what local resources or programs are most essential for immigrant families on the Central Coast?
Well, I am very proud that here in San Luis Obispo, we've had so much growth in resources over the last 8 years. I heard you list a huge, huge list, so I don't know if I can necessarily add, but I can speak to my experience when I was working as a teacher and working in the school district. And many schools have what's called an English Learner Advisory Council, where parents can come together and learn about the English Learner Service at their schools, as well as a district version of that meeting for their whole district. And so they can come together and with other parents and school district employees to better understand the services that are available. And I know that when I was a teacher, much of the way that we shared information was through those meetings. So I definitely encourage all parents out there to get involved and to know who the who's going to those ELAC or DLAC meetings and to be a part of the fabric of your school community. And then, you know, now that I'm in the state legislature, we have three offices. We have an office in Sacramento, we have an office in Monterey, and we have an office downtown San Luis Obispo at Santa Rosa and Mill, and we are at your service. And I want to say across our staff, we have at least five different languages that are spoken that include Spanish, English, French, German, Slovak, and we have access to Mixtec translation as well. And we may have some other languages in our office. And so, you know, folks from a variety of backgrounds can easily access somebody in our office who can link you with services and supports in the community, whether that's the congressional office. There's some federal services that we don't offer at this, you know, as a state office, but we can certainly link you in, or other departments within the state of California.
I appreciate you bringing up language because it's so important, especially for accessing these services. But it leads me to my next question about how individuals and families are encouraged to access these services in ways that feel safe and supportive. Are there any other ways aside from like language access that can make things more easy on folks to navigate?
Well, I think certainly if you have a friend in the community that you feel safer with, you know, have them come with you. If you have questions, you know, if you're going to a doctor appointment and you need another set of listening ears, or you're going to have a conversation with somebody, you know, around any of your rights and you want another set of listening ears, I think that is incredibly important to do. And then the various resources that you mentioned, all of them have support guidelines and things that people can do to outreach or to get the services that they need and the supports that they need. And I'm positive that many of them have community support groups. I remember when I first ran for office in 2020 and I interviewed with the group called Cause that you mentioned, that is mostly operating in northern Santa Barbara and Santa Barbara County, but a little bit in southern San Luis Obispo County. And so that was a community group that came together and offered services and support. So there are quite a few out and about across San Luis Obispo County, and many that have grown since the last time that we went through this under the last Trump administration.
And are there any examples of collaborations that your office and community groups have engaged in to amplify the support?
You know, I have been invited to speak at what we call Know Your Rights symposiums, and schedule allowing, our office will go and provide resources, or I will go in person to provide resources. And so any organization in the community is welcome to contact our office if they would like us to come and talk about what's offered at the state level. We've done this in a different vein. I was part of a drug safety fentanyl education program that was sponsored by a community organization and then held at a, you know, public agency, and a number of different groups came and had booths there. And then I spoke about different services and laws that were passed in California that we can provide. And so if folks are doing those kinds of fairs or info sessions or Know Your Rights symposium, we are certainly always available.
And one thing about the next, I was going to ask if there were any resources that I didn't mention or that you wanted to share out today.
You know, from our office, we primarily focus on connecting people with state agencies. We're not really allowed to promote any specific groups within the community. And so I would defer to the list that you said. I do know that there are, you know, are other websites across the community that are SLO specific. And if there are issues, you know, specific issue areas that people are facing, for instance, they are having trouble paying their rent or they're facing eviction, you know, we can certainly make the connection to housing and community development or to a state agency that could potentially help them through that process. If somebody is having trouble with their driver's license, we can certainly help them navigate through that process with DMV. If somebody, we had a woman call recently who was having trouble. She had a surgery that was desperately needed and she had insurance, but the place that she needed the service from was not able to recognize her insurance. And so we were able to help navigate that very specific situation. So it's hard for us to refer people broadly to specific supports within the community. But if people call us with a specific issue, we can help them navigate through the process and or put them in touch with the other government agencies that might be able to help them.
I appreciate that. Your office sounds very kind.
We try to be. I mean, I will say it goes back to, you know, having taught for such a long time. And you know that when people are in need, the first thing they often need is a listening ear and someone who is responsive. I was just reading through an email chain the other day about somebody who was facing incredible, incredible hardship and came to our office for help, and they were able to get help. But one of the things they said in their email was, nobody had been listening to me, and I finally got somebody on the other end of the phone that would listen and then try to help me. And it was stunning the power that empathy can have, particularly when combined with action. Right? Yes. Empathy without action is more of a feel good, but what our office tries to do is be empathetic and be effective.
That's amazing, and that's a really great way to become a leader.
Yeah. Well, thank you.
I'm Dr. Mario Espinosa-Kulik with you for Central Coast Voices on KCBX, Central Coast Public Radio, your listener-supported radio station. If you recently joined us for today's Central Coast Voices and want to listen to the entire broadcast, you can. It will be available on our website at www.kcbx.org under the On Demand tab. Click on Central Coast Voices and you will find this show and many others to choose from. You can also find us by searching Central Coast Voices wherever you get your podcast. To learn more about resources for undocumented immigrants, I encourage you to check out more of my stories like Slo County UndocuSupport at www.kcbx.org/people/Mario-Espinosa-Kulik. Our guest today is Assemblymember Don Addis, who is joining us to discuss resources for immigrant community members. To follow along with up-to-date information and resources from the Assemblymember's office, you can visit their webpage at a30.asmdc.org or follow the Assemblymember on Instagram at asmdawnaddis, Assemblymember Don Addis. To learn more about your rights, regardless of immigration status, check out this interactive tool by the American Civil Liberties Union at www.aclu.org/know-your-rights/immigrants-rights. As we get to the end of the show, we still have time for your email questions or comments at voices@kcbx.org. We would love to hear from you. Assemblymember Addis, let's talk about how listeners can engage with local advocacy efforts and finding support for fostering inclusive communities. What are some specific actions individuals can take to support immigrant rights and equity locally?
Well, you mentioned UndocuSupport, so I would say that that's a phenomenal organization here in San Luis Obispo County that people can get involved in through the Community Foundation. So I think the resources that you've mentioned are really important ones. I always encourage people to think about, you know, one issue that you can do something about and go do that one thing. It can get a little bit overwhelming when you're listening or watching the news and there's so many things wrong and you can't really fix them. And sometimes people feel like by getting angry that they've taken action. And really the most important thing is to go do something and do something that you feel connected with. So whether that's, you know, volunteering at a local organization or making a contribution, a financial contribution to a local organization, I think, you know, those pieces are really key, and finding that community of people that you feel good working with. Each year, we are very fortunate to be able to give an award for Nonprofit of the Year, and that has been incredibly incredibly eye-opening, the number of nonprofits that exist across the district. Mm-hmm. This last year, we gave the award to the Big Sur Health Clinic that serves people all along the Big Sur coast, regardless of documentation status. And the year before, we ended up awarding to the Santa Cruz Community Foundation. And while neither of those are here in San Luis Obispo County, there are similar organizations just like that in San Luis Obispo County that people can get involved with. I recently got to visit the only dental clinic that provides free dental care for low-income youth across San Luis Obispo County. So, you know, there's lots of different ways to be of service, but I would choose that one thing and, you know, make sure you're doing it with friends and having a good time and finding joy and being effective while you do it.
And in terms of volunteer opportunities, I have a feeling that around this time is when the Women's March is organized. And I was wondering if you know when or if there's any way folks can get involved.
I have seen some calls to action for January 18th. I would defer to the organizers to share out that information, but I believe there's going to be something at the county courthouse on January 18th. We organized Women's March for 5 years, and we actually did incorporate as a fiscally sponsored nonprofit. And then as organizers, we ended up closing that organization down as each of us were going on to other endeavors. When I got elected to the state legislature, for me, I had to move on from that organization. But the beautiful thing about Women's March and any march in San Luis Obispo County or California is that anybody can organize one. And so one of the amazing things that happened after that first Women's March is people started coalescing all across San Luis Obispo County in new and different ways that they hadn't before. And so now we're seeing things are happening in Cambria and Paso and Arroyo Grande and Grover and San Luis Obispo and Morro Bay. All over the county, people are coming together to stand up for freedoms, to stand up for democracy, to stand up for their rights. And I think that's going to be incredibly important as we go into this next administration.
Yeah. And I know that there are a lot of educators, my friends that are educators that listen to the show and in general, as well as young people who listen to Central Coast Voices. And I wanted to know if there's anything you wanted to say for folks who are preparing for the year in a school year that for some may be odd because of just wherever they may be, and things might not be taught the same, or they might be learning something else that might be not to do with the curriculum, but now is part of the curriculum, like religion. And so I just wanted to know if you had anything to say to folks in the education community.
No, I mean, it's such a good question. I was just having this conversation with my own two kids who are college age. One's in his first year in med school, and one is a freshman at Cal Poly. And, you know, the advice that I gave them was to keep their head down, to remember what is within their control and what isn't within their control, to make sure that they continue their studies, that they graduate, because we need them out in the world. And this is going to be a tough 4 years, but we are going to get through it. And there are a lot of people who are out there fighting who are going to be effective at winning many of these fights. And as we go through that, you know, we want our young people who are in school to stay in school, mm-hmm. to do good at their studies, to go into the professions where they're needed, because they are valuable parts of our community. And the rest of us are out there fighting. And it's okay to just focus on your studies and get good grades and graduate so that, you know, when it's time to enter society, you're ready to do that and to go into that profession that you've worked so hard to be in. I know how hard it is. It's easy for me to sit here and say that. I know how hard that is for young people, but it's critically important because we need them.
Yes. And the way that I see it, we have been here before. And like, we've actually been here before.
Yes.
And so there's a lot of lessons that I learned from the last presidency with Donald Trump. And that was to never give up hope. And,
yes.
And I feel like your office and your advocacy and your activism have inspired people to continue believing in themselves and the people that they represent. And I know that many people may also be gearing up for their own election cycles and their own bids for public office. So are there any words that you have for folks that are looking to join the ranks in public service?
Absolutely. And I, you know, your number one, your message is right. If we don't have hope, we have very little, and we can never let anybody take away our hope or our joy. And with that, we have to do the work. We have to be effective. We cannot lose sight of what it means to make change, and what it takes to make change is work. Mm-hmm. And it's stepping forward every single day, and it's not letting your eye off the prize. And so for folks that want to get engaged in public service, I absolutely say do it, but don't quit school to do it. Finish your education, get your degree, start making money. We need you in those professions across the Central Coast. And if you want to get into public service while you're in school, do that. But don't give up your education just to make change. Do both at the same time.
And finally, Assemblymember Addis, is there a message you'd like to leave our audience with as we come to the end of our show?
Well, I mean, I just, number one, I want to thank you for the opportunity, Doctor. I really appreciate it. I want to thank the audience for listening in today. And I want to tell people that, you know, our office is truly here to serve you. We do pick up the phone. We are there to answer your emails. And most importantly, you know, we are here to chart the path forward and to serve the community in the way that you tell us is important to you.
Assemblymember Addis, thank you so much for making the time to be with us and connect with our listeners today.
Thank you so much.
And to our listeners, thank you so much for joining us today. We hope you'll tune in next time for Central Coast Voices on Thursday, January 9th at 1 p.m. with host Fred Monroe and his guests from Spokes. They will be discussing their work providing resources to local nonprofit organizations and the upcoming Spokes Board Leadership Academy. I also wanted to bring it back to getting in contact with our guest, Assemblymember Don Addis, and you can do so by going to their website at 830.asmdc.org or follow the Assemblymember on Instagram at asmdonaddis. To learn more about your rights, regardless of your immigration status, also check out the tool I mentioned by the American Civil Liberties Union at www.aclu.org/know-your-rights/immigrants-rights. Central Coast Voices is produced by the show's hosts in collaboration with KCBX and supported by the Community Foundation of San Luis Obispo. We depend on folks like you to continue these programs, so please donate today or become a member with your monthly donation online at www.kcbx.org. And thank you for ringing in the new year with me, your host, Dr. Mario Espinosa-Kulik, and thanks for joining us.